Welcome in to See Ball, Get Ball. I absolutely love it. We have a name we settled on, Brent. We've talked about it for months. We've gone back and forth with different things. But I feel like this is the perfect me-ism. This is me. I play defense. See ball, go get the ball. We'll see ball. We'll talk about ball, like, because we're going to be all ball all the time. So were you all on board with the name?
Yes, very much so. I mean, and like I said, like I've told you before, you make fun of yourself and, you know, say you've been hitting the head a bunch and all that sort of thing. So it kind of fits with that, even though you're one of the most hyper-intelligent people that I've ever been around. So without saying that, but I still think it's perfect.
So it's just beautiful that if you've been around football long enough, you know, like, they put the dumber players on defense. That is factual. Like, hey, get on the defensive line. When the ball moves, go get it. So it fits in line with me. It is not Brent. Brent's a doctor. Brent's a writer. Brent's works with, he's in courtrooms. Like, he's intelligent. He's smart. But Brent, the tournament's been fun to watch. The SEC obviously has done pretty well. We're at halftime. Yep. Of the games with Florida's in a dogfight. I mean, Florida's in a good game. Alabama ain't missed.
So who was your Final Four, by the way?
Michigan State, Florida, who was my winner again?
So it was Duke. Alabama or Duke?
Alabama, Duke.
So, well, Duke and Alabama will play each other, I think.
Okay, so it was Duke, and then I'm missing one on the other side because I haven't even been thinking about Final Fours, but I did. Sparty was the big upset. Sparty was the big
Auburn,
one.
That did you have
I
Auburn in the Final Four? Or who did you have out of the Auburn region?
Yes, I went Auburn.
So that's Michigan State. So you had Michigan State, Florida, Duke, and then so we got what, Tennessee, Kentucky, Houston, one of those.
Houston.
All right. So I actually
Kelvin Sampson's my dude. Now listen, Izzo's my guy too. I love Izzo. I've loved Izzo for years. Again, he's another guy that I could text and we could get on, would be fun to talk to. And like, he's a man's man. Like, that dude is so, like, he had so many things. I remember going to East Lansing and he would have so many things to say about college football and the NCAA and rules, and just, he's on committees and stuff, and just his brain for competition and stuff was just fun. It was elite. Like, you learn from him every time you were around him, and that was really, really cool because he's
well, as we've appear to have
to adapt to the NIL world. There's the internet back.
Yep, there. It took a break for a second. So speaking of taking a break, I think you've taken a break from competitive pickleball, truly competitive pickleball, because we talked about Clemson the other day and I forgot to bring up this response because we were talking about what's the moment you think about. We did Deshaun Watson to Hunter Renfro. We did the Mountaineers putting 70 on him, a lot of LSU, a lot of other things, Woody Hayes stuff, but great response from your buddy, John Gordon, who was wearing, he says, I'm wearing the t-shirt at the time. And I'm going to get it exactly right. Taking a walk wearing this right now. Yeah. Can't wait for our rematch, or right after pickleball. Can't wait for our rematch. So yeah. John Gordon is ready to go at it again in pickleball.
So
I don't know that's going to end well for him.
So the story is phenomenal. You will absolutely love this. Everybody will. So Ponte Vedra, Florida speaking engagement a couple years ago, Gordon had me and Tebow on a text message and he was literally talking so much trash, like, about pickleball and how, like, he's really good, he could beat us. And I sent back and I was like, you know, there's levels to this, John. Like, this, you don't want that smoke. And he was like, dude, do you not realize, like, I played college athletes, like, I'm a D1 athlete. And I was like, okay, you played lacrosse, got it. Hey, you're a better author than me. Any day of the week, write them books. You've motivated me my whole life, like a stud. And he literally saw me on the beach in Ponte Vedra. He was like, dude, what do y'all have? And me and my bride didn't have anything. It was just me and her. And I was like, let's play later. We'll go. So he comes by, he picks me and my bride up. Brent, he talks trash the whole entire ride. Like, how he's going to beat me. Like, literally, he just keeps telling me, you know, I played Tim. I'm just telling you, like, I'm going to your backhand. Like, I'm going to go to your backhand repeatedly. I'm going to wear it out. And I was like, okay. So literally we go to warm up and he hits it to my forehand and we hit like 10 in a row, 15 in a row. And he's like, okay. And then he switches and he hits it to the other side. And I switch the paddle to my left hand and I hit it and I hit it and I hit it. And he's like, wait a minute. What are you doing? Which hand do you use? I was like, I use both. And he's like, what? I mean, literally, like I watched him simultaneously combust and his whole strategy that he'd been talking mad trash about literally went out the window. But I love playing with him, Brent, and you would have too, because the dude is a competitor. Like he like really wanted to win. Like he was talking to himself, like he was getting, you know, upset. I feel like I was like, listen, you need to write a book over there while you're, you know, facing, you know, adversity over here, because we're facing some good adversity, John. And yes.
Stay positive
for sure. And we got done. It didn't go well for John, but he has talked about over and over. I caught him off guard. He didn't know about the forehand thing. He's ready for a rematch. So I'm glad he sent that tweet out.
I do feel like I contributed a little bit to that there. Because that's how I play. I use both hands and rarely go backhand. So I think he copied that for me.
I had that elbow surgery. And so we would go play in the gym. And so I just played left-handed. And then I was like, dude, this is the same thing. So we just ended up sticking with it. But yeah, you definitely do that. I remember you did that as well.
So basketball's going on. Bam was up 13 now, by the way.
They hit football. Like 35 threes, Brent. They couldn't miss.
Yes.
I mean, that's the beauty of basketball. If you don't watch, like, just keep chucking. Because if you hit a high percentage, if you hit 40%, you're still shooting a good percentage. You get three for them. You get offensive rebounds. Like, that's just it's the modern game. And Nate Oates has done an unbelievable job. Like, Roll Tide is ridiculous in hoops. I mean, the recruiting has been sensational. Like, 3-16s, a final four. I mean, this dude is – Alabama basketball is legit. Like, they are one of the best programs in the country, and they're on that list now of the teams that are going to win a national title, you know, next or soon. And the pace in which they play is amazing.
That's like what I love.
Made shot, missed shot, the ball is up the floor, three-pointers are raining down. Like, it's just – it's really fun to watch them play.
That's how basketball should be played to me. But for the rest of the time, we're going to talk football and then maybe get done right before, and you can watch the end of that game if it's a close ending. But first off, longtime announcer who is currently the longest tenured college football analyst on any network, CBS's Gary Danielson, announced he is going to retire after the end of this season. It'll be his 36th on TV. He was crazy in the NFL for 11 years, and then he did ESPN in 1990. So ESPN ABC for 16 years before CBS in 2006. So this will be his 20th year with CBS, and one that SEC fans in a whole part of the country almost, like him and Vern for the longest time, and then now him and Nestler. It's synonymous. It was for the longest time synonymous with SEC football, and then for some unknown reason, CBS decided to not renew that, not get in on that bidding and let that go to ESPN. So CBS, those guys, I did see a lot of jokes about, or not intense not, jokes that said, hey, he spent 1 year in the Big Ten and was like, no, I'm done. I've seen enough of this.
Yeah.
But no,
he played.
I always thought he was good. Yeah.
He played
QB in the NFL.
Super smart, super witty. You could tell always very well prepared. I mean, Gary's a – if you're ever around Gary, and I was around him a bunch, like he's got that wit, man. He's got some good – and he'll cut you. He'll hit you before you know it. Like, really good personality to him. And, you know, I think he talked about the transition. You know, he wanted to bridge that gap from the SEC with obviously CBS to go into the Big Ten, which is totally different, totally unique, and not to break things up. So I think that's why he wanted to go on for – another couple of years. But I mean, he's called a ton of big games. Like you said, everybody, I think, in the SEC, if you don't know the name, you know the voice. He would start talking, you'd be like, oh yeah, got it.
Always, you could tell he just loved it too. And that's the thing for me with the announcers. I want to feel that you're there enjoying it and loving the game as much as everybody else is watching at home. Shout out to NH from Columbia, South Carolina, who's joining with us in the chat there, watching from what, 2.5 hours east of us ish, something like that.
I mean, it depends how fast you drive, Brent.
Exactly. Some drive a little faster than others. Speaking of driving fast, that was, I mean, segue of all segues. We talked about Georgia the other day and how they had a couple of,
past, by the way, or the past 2 years, whatever yeah. you want to say.
Yeah, whenever you want to say. And which, by the way, if you haven't watched that, I think the Dan, like, I re-listened to Dan Mullen talk. That was just his overall perspective on program building and team building and all the things that, and how you do that now in the current stage of college football was awesome. I thought it was great.
It was anyway, good. Georgia is that had, what got you all choked up and stuff? Because you look like you've been beaten right now, brother. So, all the people that are watching, all three of them.
Elephant in the room, right? Let's address the elephant in the room. I feel like Will Smith happened, I feel like Will Smith and Hitch. You know, when he's like allergic and he's, you know, chugging the Benadryl. So one of the beautiful, we live in an absolute beautiful place. There is no place like Athens, Georgia, in and around it. And there is like even the bike trails, like in the last, say, decade, the bike trails in and around just even downtown Athens and around that area. Awesome. So I went biking yesterday a little bit, got 10 miles in. And it put the pollen, that's the other part of living in and around Athens and Georgia, into me like it's never had in my entire life. So I have puffy eyes, red, like borderline, like crying in my office all day.
You look like you got the sheet kicked out of you, Broseph.
Yeah.
You look like you walked up on the wrong one.
Very true. Like my son said, he's going to make fun of me in the YouTube comments.
So. Thank you. Which one was that, Carson or Cameron?
That would be Carson. Well pollinated for sure. That is where we exist in the current stage of Georgia. But speaking of Georgia, Kirby actually addressed and weighed in on the issues with the driving with Nitro Tugwell and Marcus Easley. And I'll just kind of read somebody. Ryan DeBalsi from UGASports.com had asked if he had talked about would he kick players off the team, and he's or be, for first offense, like being a zero tolerance policy kind of thing that we had mentioned the other day. And he said, no, I don't believe in ultimatums when it comes to that. I really don't think that's a recipe for the problem. I don't think that solves anything. And then he says, we'll continue to look at each one on a case by case basis. You have to look at these like they're your children, because that's the way I look at it. I look at what I would do with my children, and they're 18 to 19 to 20 year olds. They make mistakes, and the consequences that come with those are on a case by case basis. And that's really what these two are dealing with. So he basically said, hey, the zero tolerance thing, we're not going to have, like, that's not going to be there. But
I wouldn't either, by the way. I wouldn't either. I love when coaches humanize. And listen, I'm not saying Kirby's perfect. He's not. Like, he's not a perfect human. Unfortunately, we're all flawed. But, like, that is exactly the right response, because, dude, think about your kids and think about when they make mistakes and think about the grace that we continue to give them. But we're also trying to stern hand them, but also teach them. Like, how do I teach them this lesson? And sometimes it's harder than others, man. Sometimes it's very difficult. Yep. And sometimes it's a stubborn lesson and it's going to take a lot of correction. But here's the thing that I've never understood. I've never understood the people that are like, if they mess up one time, we got to kick them off. Like, what if we lived our life like that? Like, all of us would be kicked out of school because of the stupid things we've done.
Or your work.
Yes. I mean, here's the difference. These guys, when they make a mistake, it goes in the paper. When you made your mistakes when you were 17, 18, 19 years old, it didn't go in the paper. 21 years old, 22 years old. So I'm with him on that. I don't know what to do. He's done all the things, man. He's brought in all the people and he's had the conversations, but – you know, there are case-by-case basis too. Well, I'll say, you know, if you're going 140 miles an hour and you're being an absolute, you know, Nimrod and you need to be corrected and you need to be kicked off, then you're kicked off. I mean, and that, there will be cases like that. And there'll be guys that have done it two or three times or done something else where it's the final straw. But, you know, you're in the business, and I know people don't want to hear this, but, like, I'm in the business of coaching at the high school level, so it's not the same. but I'm trying to help these kids, man. Like, to be the best version of themselves, to continually get better at all stages of life and all different things. And that's going to come with some knucklehead decisions, especially when you compound it with all the money that these guys are continuing to make. Yep.
And the hard part for them is what happened, you know, 2-3 years ago now. 2 years.
Yeah.
Ago, 3 years ago.
Like 2023.
That, yeah. That's right. 2 years ago. With that being as the backdrop, it magnifies all of this to a degree that is hard to even makes it even harder to deal
with. Well, and you would hope they learn the lesson like that.
Yes.
You would think that's the problem. Everybody looks at a situation where a kid, you know, lost his life and you go, man, if that doesn't wake you up, I don't know what will. And you think immediately like this will fix something like this is, but still, it's just like the people you know in your life that you're continually to try to help get out of a valley that they're in. And yep. They do it again. And you're like, what the heck are we doing? Like, and we do it again. It's like, we're doing this again. We're still in this spot. Like we still haven't learned our lesson.
Yep. He said, as far as the process we followed, it's not been several months. It's been several years in terms of defensive driving courses. Players ride and learn how to drive, just like my two kids did. He said we've had several speakers come in and continue to educate, because I think he was talking about one of them just recently got their driver's license. So that was something that I thought was
he had just got his driver's license at 19, yeah. I think, or 18 or 19.
Yeah. So no ultimatums, no zero tolerance. I do think one sort of thing to think about, though, is the racing element. Like if that's a part of what you're doing, that is just – you know, I think that's the part where he might just have to have a hard and fast line drawn. So anyway,
I mean, there's nothing good that comes out of that. I mean, there's just,
especially again, late
it's
night.
It's not some of the worst thing. Listen, you put your hand on a woman, you gone. Like you do something like that. It's
and that has happened. And he's done that.
Correct. I mean, shoot, you're in the middle of your first title run with all that pressure and Anderson, right? Like, mm-hmm. Who's one of your better pass rushers? He's a playmaker. Immediately, bam, gone off the team just like that. So I think you have to draw a line in the sand, and there are things that are not unforgivable. Like, don't get me wrong, there are sins that are not forgivable, yes. in this realm that you're going to kick them off. It's just it's not usually the drugs. It's not usually the driving. It's not usually the alcohol. Like, you usually give a little bit of grace for those, because those are things that you're learning and you go in college of how to handle and how to deal with, and hopefully how to not deal with in an excess amount or over the top amount, which unfortunately in college, I didn't see a lot of that. I saw a lot of overindulgence.
Yes. So Sean is joining us from LaGrange, other Derek from Tampa, and Sean missed the name change. So do you want to like take two on that?
Man, yeah. So Sean, the name change, see ball, get ball. Like, I'm a defensive player. You see it, you go get it. It makes it very easy. You don't have to be bright, but we're also going to see ball and we're going to get it for you. And we're going to pass it along. A lot of different ways to go with that. But the name change is super, super exciting, Sean. Thanks for asking, Sean. We needed that.
I like that. And it's a good segue, because when we're here, we're going to talk football. And speaking of football, just kind of looking at some of the things, and I think what got me thinking down this path is what we talked about with Coach Mullen on Tuesday, is he's got two new guys. And if you look at the final playoff rankings, not the seedings, but the actual rankings, you know, 1-25, there are only 10 teams that return their starting quarterback out of those 25 teams. So we're going to go through the ones who are actually getting a new quarterback. And my question for you is pretty simple, and you can expand upon it however much you want. Did they get better? Or maybe not necessarily the case, but let's look at the ones who are returning. So Penn State was ranked fourth, Drew Aller's back, Tennessee at 7, Nico's back, Boise State at 9, Mad Dog Madsen back.
Love Mad
SMU,
Dog.
SMU, Kevin Jennings back, Arizona State with Levitt, South Waller. Carolina, Sellers. Clemson, by the way, who was 16th in the rankings, even though they were the 12th seed. Klubnik is back. One that I had actually forgotten about, Retzloff, is back for BYU. And
yeah,
a lot of their team and playmakers are back. So 15, 16, 17, and then 18, Iowa State. Rocco Becht is back. Rocco. And then 20, Luke Altmaier back for Illinois. and Brett Bielema, which, by the way, what's your morning routine? Have you seen that? It's become a thing. I didn't know how it happened or what happened. I guess that is kind of talking ball because the guy had like 6 yards in college, whatever his name is, that started that whole thing.
Yeah. It'd be an interesting exercise, Brent, is to take all those quarterbacks and rank them. Like where you would think.
That's a returner?
Yes. All those guys right there.
That's next.
Yeah, I think we should do that another day or whenever, because I think that's I hear a bunch of big names in there that I think with experience, but also some up and comers that I think like next level are taking enormous steps. And yep. I'd be curious to see where everybody gets ranked because, you know, some it's interesting. We also saw a little bit of Arch Manning. So you saw that at Texas. You saw a little bit of Gunnar Stockton at Georgia, you know, so you've gotten a taste of some of those other guys in those other spots that not enough to probably say, you know, I know exactly what I'm going to get. I think Arch Manning fans and Texas fans are like, he's better right now, which we're going to debate next year and we're going to be able to see. But it's a good list of returning quarterbacks.
And plus it's 10. It's a nice round number. It's easy to rank 10. Like 1 through 10 makes it even better. So I'll keep the list handy and we'll do that. Maybe next time. All right. Here's people who are new. So first off, number one ranked Oregon in the final rankings. Go from Dylan Gabriel to Dante Moore, who was a highly recruited kid that went to UCLA and then transferred. Did they get better?
No, they did not get better. Now, they might get more talented at that spot.
I think that might be the answer.
I can see that. I can see the size, the arm, the more talent at that QB spot. But Dylan Gabriel played for 300 years in college football. Like
most starts ever.
Yes. I mean, that experience in big games and big moments, I thought his experience in that offense too, man, that quick RPO game and getting the ball out, like it was they, and the offensive line that was very inexperienced to start the season and it was bad, but he kind of got the ball out and managed that really, really well. So, no, I don't think they got better. I think they got more talented, but not as experienced.
All right, quick aside, though. Where are you ranking Gabriel in terms of this year's draft? Because I was listening to a mutual friend of ours, Steve Palazzolo and Sam Monson, on their podcast doing some QB rankings this week. And they had Gabriel fourth, right behind Jackson Dart.
Ahead of Jackson Dart.
Right behind him, right?
Oh,
Dart
okay.
Third. Gabriel fourth, and they both agreed upon that. So,
what round did they say he'd go in?
So that didn't really discuss that at that.
Because that will be, but I think that will be like way down the list of like.
Yes,
I think you're talking like
round fifth four. Or
sixth. Yeah, fourth, fifth, sixth.
At the like, earliest, fourth.
Yeah, and here's the thing: going against Gabriel, whether you like it or not, he's tiny. I mean, he's absolutely tiny, and that you think of a guy like Tua who's been tiny, and it's not shown up well. He's also a lefty, which is different, which again, I know it's not the end of the world, but left tackles make all the money. That's the blind side. And that's just, it is what it is. And right tackles have slowly starting to get paid more and more like they should. But I think the size and stature, nobody's looking at him going, I'm going to steal him in the fourth round and he's going to be my starter. I mean, he is a backup QB that maybe you need him in a spot one day in the future. And you plug and play, but he's not a guy people are looking, obviously, to build a franchise around.
All right. So next up, second ranked was Georgia. Carson Beck gone. Now with Gunnar Stockton and potentially Ryan Puglisi, but I'm going to say I think it's Gunnar Stockton to start this season.
You know, that's interesting. So much experience with Carson Beck. And Carson Beck, the Carson Beck we saw, you know, with McConkie and Bowers was totally different than we saw this year because the weapons were atrocious. Like, again – I'm not that person that's laying this all at the feet of Carson Beck. I'm not like this. There was plenty of blame to go around for every player on the offense, for coaches on the offense. Like it was a bad season for the Georgia offense. And so I think the receiving core is at least 50% better. And I think you got a legit dude in Branch on the outside. I think you got guys consistently that will catch the football. The offensive line, we got to figure it out. I think Nate Frazier is a superstar at tailback. I think he's going to be a dude, man. I think hold on to the rock and he can be special, right? Like that was the only thing he was really missing a year ago. So I don't think I think Gunnar Stockton will have a better year this year than Carson Beck had last year. That's what I think.
So, and my response and my thought on this was going to be exactly what we just talked about with Oregon, except flipped. You got less talented, but you probably are going to get better play when you look at it, and maybe better in that sense.
You know what's amazing is. I'm just telling you, I've spent time with Gunnar. He's been at our, you know, Pollock Family Foundation golf tournament the past 2 years. And I don't know, Brent, that I've met a more humble kid. I mean, I'm just telling you, like, the dude is.
The truck thing just, is real.
He's an easy kid to cheer for. I mean, he's quiet. He's reserved, but he watches tape. He grinds. Like, he loves the game of football. I can tell you that he's not the perfect quarterback, but from a height perspective, from a release perspective. But here's another thing I can tell you too, is the Georgia quarterbacks that have done really great weren't the highly recruited ones all the time. Like, Aaron Murray was pretty highly recruited, but he had deficiencies of being short. David Green had deficiencies of that people complain with. I think Gunner's got a lot of this in his chest, and I think he's got something about him that you saw the guys rally behind him, and I think he's going to do really, really well. I think Ryan Puglisi is going to be an absolute superstar too. He's got the tools. He's got to learn a ton. He's from smaller town football up north, and, you know, played baseball a bunch growing up too. And I think there's a lot to learn up here, and he's going to continue to do that. And he's got all the flipping. I mean, that dude, revolutions. That thing spins like a mug when he throws it, but. You know, the experience and some of the stuff that goes with it, he's still got to learn.
So Starch Manning is joining us from Dallas. So good timing because next up is Texas.
Did you say Starch Manning?
Yeah, that's what
That's amazing.
Yep. pretty good. Go from Quinn Ewers to Arch. Did they get better? Because I'm going to say definitively yes. I think so.
It's so interesting that you say that so emphatically when
I think Quinn held them back in a way. Sorry, I do.
But when Arch came in, I didn't see a lot of, I saw his ability to run the football. I like that. Yep. But again, the offensive line is taking several steps back, steps back. They're going to get better at running back. They lost a first round pick at wide receiver. They lost their tight end, and they're going to have weapons. And they're going to get better. Sark, I think Sark will probably use his ability in this system. And I think he's going to be similar to Carson, like Gunnar and Carson. I think he's going to put up better numbers than our boy did last year.
Like years.
Quinn, I think he'll put up better numbers than Quinn. He has better arm talent, so the down-the-field passing game will be way more of a weapon. Just like when Arch played. When Arch played, the numbers went way up. The downfield passing for sure went up. But there was something to Quinn and the experience and, you know, knowing the answers and making – he had a knack for some plays too, man, in some big games. He made some plays, and so I just – I'm not like you. I'm not sold right away. Like, oh yeah, Arch is a superstar. Like everybody says, you know, that because of the name, I think he has a chance to be really, really good, but they're going to have to be great around him. And I think Texas will be. Listen, I put him at number one. So I kind of gives you, you know, how I feel about him.
And the other thing for me was, I think he fits what Sark wants to do more so than what yours did a little bit. All right, Notre Dame's next. Riley Leonard gone. And then we got a combo of either CJ Carr or the Angeli kid that played a little bit in the playoff game.
Doesn't matter. No, not getting better. Yep, absolutely not.
I think that's an area that we got Coach Freeman coming up at some point here soon, so we'll have to talk to him about that.
I couldn't be a bigger fan of Riley Leonard. Like, I just – like, what's inside of here? And again, we talked about on this broadcast over and over again. I don't think people understood how athletic that freak was. Like, he just took off and ran consistently and consistently made plays. And people just, oh, that's crazy. How did he do that? No, he did it because he's a freak. Like, he's an athlete. Look at his high school basketball tape. Like, dunking all over the place. He's just this and the experience, multi-year starter. And I thought his throwing got better and better as the year went on. And I just – I'm more confident in this one than we've had it yet. Like, that's how confident I am that that you're not going to take a step forward because I thought he wore an S on his chest a lot of weeks.
All right, Ohio State next, from Will Howard to Julian Sayin, who was a big-time recruit that initially went to Alabama and then ended up Ohio State after Saban left.
Oy, this is tough. Again, fifth-year quarterback in Will Howard, the experience, the run game that Will Howard brought when it didn't work. You know, like when things weren't on schedule or third downs, or the fact that I could run the big mule and get those extra set of downs, Chip Kelly's gone. You know, a little bit more. You still got Jeremiah Smith, for gosh sakes. Thank you. You're welcome, by the way. Whoever plays quarterback in this system is like, thank you, Jesus. Like, look how easy this is. This is not hard. You see that guy? Okay, I'm just going to throw it to him. Like, that's really, really fun. I don't think he's Will Howard. I think he's going to be a wizard with the passing game, though. Like, I think he'll throw the football. I think he'll make big plays. I think he'll put up big numbers. But the encapsulating of experience and legs and big plays that Will and moxie and leadership that Will Howard played with, I don't think he can replace that.
And you get to see it in game one.
Yeah.
It's like that against Texas.
But the dude can spin it now. Like, you watch him spin a football and you're like,
comes out quick.
Okay. I like that.
A lot of ELO. So next up, Indiana. Curtis Rourke is gone, and in comes Fernando Mendoza.
Let me tell you something. What if I told you that, like, I extensively watched Mendoza a lot? Like, I broke down several of his games. Several of his games when he went in the transfer portal, and I think he is an elite fit for that offense. Like, freaking elite. Like,
yes.
It's just he's big. He's strong in the pocket. He can get the ball out. He's also a way better athlete because he's 6'5", I think. He's 6'5", but the dude can roll. Like, he is going to be the next quarterback. Now, Rourke was a stud, and his anticipation and his ability to deal was really, really good in his experience. But I think you get another guy with experience. Like, I'm not going to say he's Rourke. I can't go that far, but I'm a big fan of this dude. I liked him. I know there's a lot of teams that had him very highly ranked when it came to the portal and that wanted him and that didn't necessarily maybe go in the portal and get a guy, but he was on their list of guys that they wanted.
Yeah. And it was pretty well out there that here local to us, it may have been a spot that he ended up in. So I had broken down his tape. We had, you know, had sort of a film breakdown ready just in case he did commit as a transfer to Georgia. And because the biggest thing for him versus Rourke is the mobility factor.
Yes.
Like, he has legit mobility. I mean,
and it's tough. Man, Brent, I saw him take shot. I would say they get better. Shot.
And by the way, I think Indiana is kind of one of those teams that if you look at their depth chart, what they lost, they just went and got transfer guys that replaced that are still old, experienced veteran players.
Yeah, but that doesn't work all the time. FSU no. FSU fans would like a word, Brent.
Yes, very true. But I think they could potentially be a little bit better at quarterback there. Alabama's next. Jalen Milroe gone. So we got Ty Simpson, Austin Mack, maybe the Russell kid that's the freshman, but likely not. So better, yes or no?
I think people are not going to like this. Alabama
fans, I bet we actually might have the same answer, by the way.
Yes, I think they're better. I think Jalen Milroe is one of the freakiest talents we've seen. Like, just his ability to stop, start, make plays. You love his personality. You love his makeup. But the dude left a lot of layups on the court. I mean, he consistently. You would watch tape, and I think when you think about too DeBoer and an offense, and I think about his offenses, it's like staying on schedule, staying in rhythm. You got Ryan Williams, you know, you got big targets, you got little targets, you got a little bit of everything last year with Law. I mean, I think you had a lot that you could work with. And I just think his inability to consistently make those plays kind of drove you a little bit nuts. So I actually think Alabama's offense will be in a better spot. And I think they'll be more on schedule. Obviously, the element of the run game won't be, but I think they'll be better at the quarterback spot.
Yeah, the explosive part of it, no, but the on schedule consistency of offense, yes. And I think that's where they're
going. Yeah, but you still got Ryan Williams. Those explosive plays are coming.
Yeah. And they're Alabama. They're going to have running backs. Miami next. I think I can definitively answer this one too. From Cam Ward to Carson Beck.
What was your answer?
They did not get better.
No.
Because I think Cam Ward's going to be the first pick in the draft.
Well, I think obviously it's looking, I wouldn't take him one. I wouldn't. But Cam Ward's playmaking ability, Cam Ward's savvy, Cam Ward's knack, and then the pieces around him that are now gone for Carson Beck that will be a little bit more difficult, minus the defense. The defense was terrible. But Cam Ward was one of the best players in the country. And if he had a defense, he'd have been in the college football playoff and he might have won the Heisman. I mean, that's how freaking good he was and clutch in big moments and big plays. I don't know that there's a guy in college football that's coming back or coming into the starting role that we'd put over Cam Ward. Like that's how freaking good he was.
I agree. I wouldn't. And also the thing with Ward too, and going from Ward to Beck, is so much of what made Miami's offense great was his ability to make the second or third play or the scramble play, all that. You're not getting that now.
Like no.
It's just not a part of Carson Beck's game. So, no. Next one's an interesting one too. Ole Miss at 14. Jackson Dart is gone. In is Austin Simmons, who we've seen a little bit of.
About to say, and I liked what I saw. I mean, that dude came cold off the bench in Ole Miss, like against one of the top teams in the country in Georgia, and he just went lefty, right? Lefty, little bit of mobility, ball spins off the hand, super nice. His coach is Lane freaking Kiffin, and that doesn't change. Lane, you know what Lane does? Slot machine, next guy, really good. Slot machine, next guy, really good. Like, so
numbers, points.
Yeah, and now listen, you know, they lose a lot of pieces on that offense that obviously makes a huge difference. But I believe in Lane. I don't think they'll be – the numbers will be as eye-popping because Jackson Dart running the football, kind of doing a little bit of everything. But I think it's going to be business as usual in a Lane Kiffin offense.
I think what he can potentially give them as a third and nine, third and ten passer might change their entire team.
He's got a better arm.
Because I think back to – and it's literally one throw. The one throw he made on a third down against Georgia, they were in a zone – sort of triangled the guy, and he anticipates and throws it into a window that I don't think any other quarterback is going to make that throw. So he's a baseball pitcher. The arm is legit. This is one where you miss the running game of the QB maybe a little bit, and you miss Dart's toughness, but you might add in other areas that make your offense a little more consistent and better. So
yeah, and Dart, listen,
I'm very curious to see how he plays full time.
And we've talked about Dart. Dart's my spirit animal. Like I've said that a bunch. McShay absolutely loved that when I went on the show. Like he loved that because the fieriness, the competitiveness. Now this kid, I haven't seen that. Like, and he looked actually super, super calm and surreal. Yep. And maybe we'll get Kiffin on to talk about him, like just to get to know him a little bit. But like, so I think that will be different. The experience that Jackson Dart brought from multiple teams and the leadership, I don't think you're replacing, and just the it factor. But again, there's a reason why Jackson Dart's not talked about as the first quarterback or the second quarterback. Like his skills aren't there. Like he's not the big, tall, strong guy. Can he play the position? Abso-frickin-lutely. Is he a baller? Absolutely. I think he's an NFL starter. I think he's a guy that you're going to depend on one day and you're going to trust. But he doesn't have that huge arm and those measurables that I think a lot of people want.
And hopefully people are listening now because Bama's up 21 on
ball game. BYU.
Missouri, Brady Cook gone. In comes Bo Prabula, transfer from Penn State.
Yeah, Bo Prabula. And remember, we've seen him a good bit now. He can run. He can really, really run. I mean, really good athletic ability. Remember, they put him in those packages at Penn State. Shoot, the last 2 years, you know, super highly recruited kid, a lot of ability. Brady Cook, I remember we talked to Eli Drinkowitz on the show, and just he's the Missouri guy, right? Like from Missouri, you know, the ultimate leader, the ultimate captain. Again, the tough guy who sprains his ankle, goes to the hospital, comes back and finishes the game. But just an experience, but he just wasn't overly talented. And I thought they had talent around him, and I thought they could have been better as an offense. But Drinkwitz always dials up good stuff. They're very well coached. So I think you go up with Missouri and Bo Pabula. And I think his running ability with this offense will be a little bit of a pain in the butt because he can really go and he can scoot. So I think it goes up.
Now, I think I saw Drink said recently, like he feels like it's his most talented team. So next up, Syracuse. I think this one's actually pretty easy. Kyle McCord is
gone.
I
don't care who you say.
It's a bunch of names that you probably don't really know. One of them is Collins' kid that transferred from LSU, Michael Johnson Jr., a Williams kid.
But let me ask you a question, Brent. If we were making this conversation a year ago and I said Kyle McCord, you'd have been like, ugh. And I would have too, to be clear. When I watched him at Ohio State, I did not think Kyle McCord was special. Not one iota. Not in the least bit did I think he was a guy that I was like, oh, yeah, I want him. Like, I want him to come in right now, and I think my team immediately gets better and goes from here to here. Like, but that dude went to Syracuse, and my gosh, was he fun to watch. I think he led the nation in passing, right? Like, he just
– yardage, I think, yeah.
Yeah, it was incredible to watch that kid who took a lot of lumps at Ohio State and then transferred, and then Fran, you know, sent the bottle of champagne, obviously, to Columbus to make sure that Coach Day was taken care of because that was the best thing that happened to Syracuse football. So a year ago, I wouldn't have said it either, but man, did he come on the scene and play unbelievable.
Army lost its quarterback, the Daily Kid. I don't know. Dwayne Coleman is the person who's listed on the depth chart.
Army system is always plug and play.
Yeah.
Like it has very little to do with a guy and an individual talent being so much better than somebody else. Their system is so good. They're going to put up huge numbers, and I think it's business as usual.
Colorado, Shador is obviously gone. In comes either the Salter kid that played at Liberty or Juju Lewis, the highly touted freshman from Carrollton, Georgia.
And obviously it's a step down. I mean, you're just not.
I think so, yes.
As much as we talk about Shador at the NFL level and some of the things maybe that doesn't quite make him elite of elite, that dude had experience, and that dude was tough. And that dude fought for his team. I mean, that dude, he took – I was impressed with Shador. I thought to watch him go from – huh?
He changed their program.
He did. And to watch him go from, you know, Jack State, HBCU, to bigger football where it's harder and it's tougher to – and he put up big numbers. He took care of the football. He had all the scrutiny and all the pressure, and he handled it, you know, exceptionally well. So now Julian's going to be a stud now. I mean, that dude –
He reminds me of Shador, where it's not super, like not the 6'4", 230-pound body with the rocket arm, but just supremely accurate.
I think he's a better athlete, though.
And a little bit better. I think he's a little bit better athlete, actually, yes. Yeah,
a little better athlete, but that dude was wanted by everybody in the country for a reason. I mean, that dude he's got some insane talent, and he will be just fine, but what does Colorado do around them? And I think that experience and no Travis Hunter, I think you immediately take a pretty big step down.
Yep. Last two, I kind of lumped together. UNLV and Memphis. So Haj Malik Williams gone from UNLV. We talked to Dan Mullen about Alex Orji and Calandria from Virginia. And then Memphis loses Seth Hennigan, and they get Nevada transfer Brendan Lewis. So Hennigan was a four-year starter, so I think you're going to take a little bit of a step down. But Memphis has also been one of those teams that they're just good no matter what.
Always.
And two other ones that weren't in the top 25 that I wanted to just get your thoughts on. So Michigan goes from whomever.
Doesn't matter.
Different guys. Doesn't matter. To either Bryce Underwood.
Three or four to
Bryce Underwood or even Fresno State transfer, Mikey Keene, but likely the Underwood kid I think will play and play early.
Michigan had one of the worst quarterback rooms in the country a year ago. And
only one way to go.
And they beat Ohio State. Like, we got to the point where we were literally watching Davis come in the game. We're like, you know what? He's not horrible. I think
he didn't put the other team two straight times.
I think this guy's better than the other guys. So, like, I mean, it was rough to watch them just – to watch them still be competitive in football games was such a bad quarterback spot. And that nobody spent more in the offseason than they did. Like they backed the Brinks up truck for that kid. And there's a reason. I mean, he's just.
By the way, looking at him in some of the pictures and the videos, the size of that, he looks like Cam Newton from a size.
He's a good looking species.
And then lastly, Oklahoma, Jackson Arnold and the Hawkins kid, to now John Mateer. I think that's another one that.
It's another one.
A lot of good vibes in
the. When you say. No. Say the other two names real quick again.
Jackson Arnold, Michael Hawkins Jr.
Yes. I don't even have to say the other name. Don't even say the other name and you're going to go yes. Like, and if I'm an Oklahoma fan, I'm so excited because I got a new OC who is familiar with him, obviously who comes from Washington State, but I know exactly, listen, well, as long as you have Brent Venables, you'll have players on the defensive side of the football that play with energy, that play smart, that play aggressive, that want to rip your face off. So if I can just get something on that offensive side of the football, and you immediately know with that duo, immediately, you know, you are way better because they were wretched. They were bad. Like they were very ungood. Okay. It was ungood. It was not fun to watch. It was literally like, how long can they stay in games? The only game where they kind of went off was Alabama somehow, some way. They just QB run game just destroyed Bama. But that was, you know, Oklahoma's a team that you get good position, you get good quarterback play. They go from being a team that's the bottom tier in the SEC to quickly being a team that you don't want to play.
Yep. Well, that's it. That's all the starting quarterback situations right now.
That's good. You know what? I didn't know a single one of those questions that were coming, and I hadn't thought about that, but that's such a good exercise, like, for looking ahead to the next team, because whether you like it or not, and Brent played quarterback, by the way, in high school, and I did not, and I ate quarterbacks for a living, and I don't like quarterbacks. It's the most important position in football. I mean, it is. Like, when you have that guy, it changes everything. And so whoever can figure it out with these returners, even with the supporting cast being great, if you don't have that guy, it doesn't matter. I mean, you look at Ohio State the year before that, when McCord was there, it just didn't work. I mean, you had great weapons. You had unbelievable running backs. You had an unbelievable O-line. Like, you had all the things you needed, but you get that guy at the quarterback spot and things can change. And that's why the transfer portal, it initially was called by all the coaches in college football when I'd go all over the place, Brent. They just said it's a QB portal. Yeah. That's exactly what they said. They're like, this is a QB portal. You just got to go get your QB. Now, listen, I think it's become more than that. And
yes,
NIL has kind of changed that. Now you see so many starters jumping in from all over the place. But it used to be quarterbacks going in and trying to find a spot that's going to maximize their talents, their gifts. And then all of a sudden you watch them, you know, tear it up. So that was a fun exercise.
And the other interesting thing is that you've got six of the top 10 teams and the traditional powers like or UGA, Texas, which Texas is a little more known, but Ohio State, Notre Dame, Oregon, all these guys that they are also replacing their quarterback. So that makes, hey, maybe we got wide open 2025 in terms of college football.
Well, and it kind of felt like it was last year. Last year was pretty wide open. And at one point we didn't know what was going on, and Ohio State obviously put it together and got hot. But remember, the Buckeyes wouldn't even have been in the 14 playoffs. They'd have been on the outside looking in, and they won it. So next year, which one of these guys throughout the season develop and become, by the end of the year, when they need to be great, they become that dude. And then their squad can go win a natty. But appreciate y'all joining us again. We got a new name. We are better than ever. I mean, we keep getting better, baby. We're not going to stay the same. We're going to keep getting better. See ball, get ball. I love it. Defensive players, we just watch the ball. We go get it. We'll get you instant reactions. We'll continue to cover more things. We got our next topic now. We'll talk about, you know, ranking the quarterbacks that are coming back in college football and where those teams stand, because that has a lot to do with what teams are going to be at the top. Like, we just talked about how important that position is. So we will see you next Monday, and maybe we'll break down some quarterbacks, and we'll still keep working on some coaches and some guests.
Later.